Catholic test of the emergency alert system. This test was originated by the Multnomah County Emergency Management Agency in cooperation with other emergency management agencies, broadcasters, and cable operators. This system informs you of events that pose an immediate threat to your life, health, or property. If this had been an actual emergency requiring immediate action or evacuation, official messages would have followed the alert tone. This test will conclude in 5 seconds.
Using crime and advertising, they are more and more dependent upon subscribers.
November 18th, from 8 p.m. until 10, from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. We will focus on Mr. Gil Scott-Heron. Gil Scott-Heron established the attitude and stylistic vocabulary of socially conscious music in America. His music was powerful, his lyrics relevant, and his voice, beautiful. We will also submit a musical goodbye and a love letter to President Barack Obama. So join us from the grassroots, November 14th and November 18th, from 8 to 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO Portland.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Marlena Stoddard-Hayes. Her show, Hyphae, runs through November 26th at Butters Gallery at 157 Northeast Grand Avenue. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Marlena.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So this show is abstract painting. It's acrylic on linen on board, and as you walk around the gallery, you see paintings are either grouped in sixes, sometimes in twos or threes, and then there are larger paintings, maybe 80 inches by 40. They're all very similar. They all have the same elements. The palette varies a little, but they almost look like you're underwater, a murky fish tank or pond, but there's always this bright light source. There's always this glow in them, sort of beads and berries and circles, and maybe sometimes they have a halo like they're frog spawn. And then you have these other images which are, they look like sea anemones. And those are very special. Those are prints that you've made from mushrooms.
Yes.
So it's an amazingly organic looking thing. It looks like something in nature, but obviously you've built these paintings up from many, many layers.
Right.
And also they have very complex names. What is Vis Medicatrix Naturae?
Oh, Vis Medicatrix Naturae?
Yeah.
It's a philosophy that you strengthen your own body in your humanity by interacting with nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so the paintings are really kind of built around that, that the more you understand the way that nature speaks and you integrate some of those principles into your making process as an artist, that it will actually inform your own bodily processes, making you stronger.
So by making the art, you'll get stronger, or by looking at the art?
Well, hopefully it will transfer to other people. They will become a little more enlivened by looking at the pieces. They're purposefully made with this idea of mystical sort of density to them. Like, I'm very concerned with the process of using the materiality of water, because water is a living element, and water is a transference material that embodies any emotional thought that you put into it, which is a kind of a deep way of saying that water is that malleable. Mm-hmm. And since we're 70% water, it's a wonderful material to be exploring.
So you'll take a canvas and cover it with a piece of board, is that right? You take a board and cover it with linen.
My husband is a sculptor, and so he makes all of my surfaces, and they're actually made of luan, which is a special type of birch plywood, and it's very thin, but it's very sensitive, and he makes a cradle for this particular kind of wood, and then a Belgian linen is stretched over the top of that support system. And then the linen is gessoed either three times, but then lately I've been using gesso that's only been, a surface that's only been gessoed once. And so the water travels differently over kind of a loosely configured linen. There's a little more grip to the surface pliability of the linen. And so the water travels differently, and you can capture pigmentation within the surface molecules of the water in a very intriguing manner that way.
So is the process, do you paint vertically or do you put them down?
No,
flat?
I work flat, mm-hmm. and for most of the painting. I put them on a vertical easel just for the advantages of stepping back and seeing what the painting surfaces are doing. But for the most part, they are painted flat.
And what are you using, a brush?
No, I don't really use brushes. I use drips and pours. And sometimes I will use a tiny brush that will grab onto pigment, and then I let the water disperse the pigment naturally, and you can create some amazing sort of shifts in color that way. It has a lot of waiting involved. It's not a fast process.
Are you waiting to see what happens, or are you just waiting for things to dry so you can move on?
Well, I'm waiting to see what happens, and I also wait for things to dry. I have roughly 20 or 30 things all in development at one time.
Oh, wow.
And I paint over a period of months, and that's why I look at the paintings as one big painting, because they all kind of inform each other, and eventually there's one painting that's, I always call it kind of the seed painting. It informs all the rest of the other paintings.
Which one is that?
Well, for this show, there was a very long panel, and it's called Billow.
It's a vertical panel?
Yes, it is.
60 by 24?
Yes.
I noticed on the side of it, it kind of looks like one of those pictures of the cosmos, you see where it's colored, so you get a bit more sense of what's out there. Sort of purple and gray with a silvery white glow. And then down the left-hand side, there are these spots and lines, or like lines with dots on them that mm-hmm. seem to be not just flicked at the paint at the surface, but you know, carefully drawn.
Oh,
how did you make those marks?
Well, I was trained initially as a calligrapher, and so the mark and the line is very important to me, and the ascender and descender and the ligature of strokes and how they combine together on a surface is important. So you can adapt a liquid gesso, and you can put it into like a ketchup bottle. It has a very small nozzle on the end, and then you can adjust your settings on that bottle to make a wonderfully kind of modified brush pen. And that's what I use. I make my own bottles at home.
From ketchup?
No, just from plastic bottles with a lid that can be taken on and off, and then you can formulate your own kind of liquidity of the paint, I guess. And so gesso, I use a little bit of gesso. I put a little bit of gel medium in there and then some water.
Oh.
And shake it up and, test it on another side piece of paper. But by either tenderly squeezing the nozzle, it comes out in a very fine jet. Or if you hyper squeeze the nozzle, it comes out in a big, voluminous, kind of layered stream, and then you can modify it that way.
Mm-hmm. Do you then modify it with a knife or a brush?
No, I don't use any brushes on those streams. I only use maybe a plexiglass panel, and you can actually impress the plexiglass onto that moving stream, and it makes a print.
Mm-hmm.
And then this fine print produces hyphae, which are interlocking ridges. And anything that is water-based makes a hyphae mark. And so you can judiciously put those wherever you want to use them.
So what does hyphae mean?
Well, hyphae is a root structure. In the fungi world, hyphae are how roots communicate with each other, the mycelium that's underneath the tree.
So mycelium's that fungus that connects trees to other fungi, is that right?
Yes.
And underground communication system
and
that
they
goes
share
on for hundreds
nutrients.
Of yards.
Yes.
So a hyphae is what?
Well, for me, it's looking at the universal way that nature speaks. And I thought it would be a great way to... It just came to me that that's kind of maybe what these paintings are about. Mm-hmm. They're all kind of interlocking. They're all kind of speaking together. Mm-hmm. And the more paintings that I make, the more informed I feel about the soil and all of these different connections that are underneath the normal ground that we walk on.
Now, you live in West Lynn. You came here from the Midwest.
Yes.
You kind of fell in love with this piece of land, and
yes,
you use the land in the paintings in the sense that you take mushrooms from near you and then you like press them. Would you put
them
in?
Well, you don't press the mushroom. You have to be very tender with them, and so you harvest them. You don't take all of them from a stand because you want them to reproduce, and some of the spore caps should be left in place, but you tenderly take off the stipe, which is the stem. And then you set this cap on top of a dry surface.
Mm-hmm.
And then over a period of time, the spores will just drop out of the caps. And they have different pigmentations in them. And each cap is unique, just like a fingerprint. And some of the caps look like flowers. Some of them look like donuts. Some of them look like bagels. Some of them look like butterflies, you know, and then they smoke because smoking happens when the molecules and the oxygen are always moving, and it influences how the spores drop.
Do they, when you say the spores drop, you mean they literally go through the air, like when you hit a plant and it puts out spores?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But these, you're placing these down, like the ridges are touching the medium.
The gills, mm-hmm. But the medium
gills
needs to be dry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if the medium is wet, it influences the gills and actually starts to get them to decompose a little too fast.
Okay. So if this was me at home and I had a big Safeway mushroom, you know, one of those ones.
Oh,
like
a portobello. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like 4 inches across.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I would put it on a sheet of copier paper on my counter.
Sure.
Dry, and come back. How much longer? How long would it take to get a print?
I would say probably 3 hours.
Oh, is that all?
And if you want a very dark, rich chocolate brown or golden brown, that could be all night long. And then you cover it with either a plate or a piece of fabric, and that stops the airflow from hitting it so hard. And then you get a more pristine, clear print.
Oh, so it really is about the motion of the spores in the atmosphere and how they land.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then, are they coming from between the gills?
Oh, I am not sure exactly about that. But I know that the gills are made of what they call chitin, which is a very enamel hard surface. So that if you were to even look at these paintings up close, you would see the structure of these spore drops is very, very precise. And you can sand back into these spore drops, and they're so rigid and structurally sound that they don't lose their integrity, even with layers and layers of paint over the top, and you can still sand through, and those layers will remain in place. It's just the most strange thing.
The spores are actually hard?
Yes, the spores drop, and they have chitin in them,
mm-hmm,
which is a type of bonding that some of the mollusks have in their structure, too.
Oh, that's how seashells remain so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So what stage are you putting these prints on? Because like I said, it feels like an underwater scene where you have jellyfish or sea anemones kind of floating by.
Mm-hmm.
These are big mushrooms that you've placed on the surface.
Well, the mushrooms are adaptable and the painting surface is adaptable. You can either start first by doing some spore prints and then applying paint over the top of that, pigmentation over the top, or you can sandwich these fungi prints in between the paint structure. It's very adaptable. It's basically how many fungi you have to work with, and it's a little bit unpredictable, but September and October are always the best months for finding fungi in this region. And so you might have to wait a whole cycle of a year until they appear, and then you can work them into your painting.
It's early November now. Is the season done for you?
No, it isn't. There is a particular species called the Codinaria cinnamoneus, and they are a golden spored sort of creature, and they come up now. The agaricus, which are your large-capped fungi, they're kind of done for at this point, but the Codinarias are coming on now. Mm-hmm. But year by year, everything is different. I mean, you can kind of generalize when things will be appearing, but I would say since I've been doing this about a decade that things are changing slightly.
Doing the printing or just collecting them?
Oh, doing the printing has been about a decade.
Wow. Do you ever do magic mushrooms?
I haven't tried those.
Don't you think it would influence your artistic process?
I don't know. I like to have a little more access to all my faculties.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Marlena Stoddard-Hayes. Her show, Hyphae of Paintings, is on at Butters Gallery, which is at 157 Northeast Grand Avenue through November 26th. Marlena, you were a painting professor in the Midwest, and then you moved to West Lynn. Why?
I worked for the Kansas Arts Commission as an artist in residence, and I found myself teaching just an amazing amount of people. I had a dean at my college who suggested that I was working too hard, and he said, maybe you should take some time off. So I took a leave of absence or a sabbatical, and then I put together some grant money, and I was living in France on a grant in Aix-en-Provence, and then I also applied to the Sitka Center for Art and Ecology, and so in 1990 I came out as an artist in residence to Sitka.
Oh, you're a Sitka person.
Yes, I am.
And was that your first contact with Oregon?
Yes, it was, and I was just enchanted with the setting. I mean, who wouldn't be? And it was so biologically alive. It was so, you know, just rich in shapes and forms. And I felt my own brain kind of expanding because of the richness of the region. And after living at Sitka, I told myself I wanted to move here permanently.
Did you make a similar kind of art before this kind of mushroomy?
No, I wouldn't say it was similar. It was...
Was it abstract?
It was more entrenched in landscape. And I think most painters that come out of landscape, that's where you develop a sense of how to evoke atmosphere. Because landscapes live in four different types of depth, and then you transfer that into abstract painting.
Hold on. What are these four?
Oh, the four types of depth? Well, you have a deep interior space, and that would be the most far away region, and then of course there's foreground, middle ground, and background, but it's this deep interior space that I'm really interested in evoking.
Is that a metaphor?
I don't think so.
It's like just the back of the painting?
The back of the painting.
The far bit.
The far bit. Well, you know, everybody is, I mean, maybe not everyone, but there's always that lure of what's behind something, what's way off in the distance. And I think that's why you read a book or a novel, you just keep wanting to know what's in that distance. And I try to approach painting as being a novel as opposed to being a short story. I want people to really engage with the piece.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about where you live in West Lynn.
Well, let's see, my husband and I are kind of adaptable people, I guess you'd say, and we bought a kind of a rundown property. It was built in the early 60s, and it was on an acre, and it's on a ravine. It has views of the Willamette River. It has mature trees. It has a very large front yard. It's perfect for making a garden and for developing, you know, a creative space. And my husband is trained as a sculptor, so he has worked for 17 years on this house, you know, making small modifications. And then I'm a gardener, and I have all of these plants that kind of inform my painting. And then the wonderful thing about doing all of that and gradually increasing a property to become a thing of beauty is that if you have a smart tax person, you can write off these expenses because it helps to grow your own artistic practice.
What kind of plants do you specialize in?
Well, let's see, we have a lot of natives. I have some rhododendrons, a lot of, a lot of shrubs, I guess you'd say. We have a whole hemlock hedge that's quite long, and that's where a lot of these mushrooms appear. They are interspersed with some of the big spruce and some of the hemlocks on our property. And then in the back, it's mainly big leaf maple, and it is alder, and it is cottonwood, and they're all natives. We have a lot of holly as well. And then in the front part of the garden, we do have some Mediterranean plants. We have a strawberry shrub that's now tree size, and it has these magical berries that come off of them. And we have just an amazing amount of food producing mm-hmm. plants.
And where do the mushrooms come from? Where do you find them?
Well, they are always interlocking with the old growth hemlock and Sitka spruce.
Right.
And they like to live where it's fairly damp and where they have this relationship with the roots. The large mushrooms you don't find, say, within a rose bed, or you don't find them with commercial shrubs that you buy at a nursery. You know, these mushrooms have a longer relationship with the big trees.
Can you say a bit more about the idea of the metaphor of plants communicating with each other and how you project that metaphor onto the world? What does it mean?
Well, I think as human beings, I think that you miss a lot if you go too fast. And we live in a very fast world right now, especially with all the digital means. And nature is a different thing, and it works in cycles. And it moves slowly, and you have to be outside, and it means that you're not going to be on screen so much. And when you start to see how these different plants signal to each other, they signal according to temperature, they signal according to rain, they signal according to nutrients, and then becoming more aware of that, you become this more enlightened person to what's going on in the ground. And it's helped me develop as an artist in a healthy way, I believe. And then by making the paintings, it's helped me to find more interlocking relationships with other people. It has allowed me to find friendships. I'm an only child, and so making things has always been a form of connectivity for me.
You used to make stuff as a little kid?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Like what?
Well, let's see. When I was 2, I was scribbling on walls and behind doors and in closets. So it was a lot of motor movement and then just constantly drawing. But I grew up in Wyoming, and so we were outside a lot. And I was around mushrooms in the high, high rocky range of southern Wyoming, around Laramie and Medicine Bow and Centennial, all those regions of Wyoming, which are fairly wild. And you'd see just colonies of fungi all the time. We were outdoors a lot.
Mm-hmm. And your dad was a lawyer?
Well, no, he was a law professor.
Oh, okay.
At the University of Wyoming. And then...
But you had access to the outside?
Oh, always.
Yeah.
Always the outside. And I'm that way now, too. I'm not very good with a cell phone.
Well, this is it. I mean, I should inform the listeners now that you're an extreme outlier. You don't have a cell phone and you don't really want one. You got one today. You borrowed your daughter's.
That's right.
She's like, how old? 14?
She's 14.
So that must have been hard to borrow.
I don't know. I'm a little, I have a little bit of, I guess, slight paranoia about it. I just don't want everyone knowing everything, where I'm, where I am, and what I'm
doing. Oh, you mean the
doing,
the tracking part of it?
Yes, I don't like that, and I don't like just being so available to anyone, and you know, calling you and, and answering. And
what about the whole, how it takes you away from the moment, and
it does
away from people that you're with?
I don't like that. I like eye-to-eye contact. I like old-fashioned conversation where you're watching people's lips move as they're speaking. And
but I
should
point
really
out,
like
you've had your eyes closed for the last 10 minutes.
Well, I like when I'm talking, sometimes I have to close them.
Yeah. Why?
It helps me to stay focused on what my deeper meaning might be, I guess.
Right, right. Do you see the your place as a painter as of trying to tell the world something? You're trying to say, wake up, there is this communication system under the ground and we might do well to replicate it in our lives?
Well, I think slowing down in a world that's going faster is, I think we need to be slower as people. I think fast is equivalent to stress. And I think slowing down makes you more grounded. I think that you do miss a lot if you are always not in the moment and you're always moving. Mm-hmm. And I think the other piece to this is that I'm a walker. And I do take walks almost every day. And I developed that habit when living in Europe. It's very pedestrian friendly there. And I try to kind of live a European lifestyle as much as I can in this country.
Where do you walk now?
Well, I walk along the Willamette River. I walk in my neighborhood.
In West Lynn?
Yes.
Is there a bluff? Do you have to go down to the river?
Yes, you go down to the river. And we have a little buck that lives in our canyon. And there's a mother doe, and she has a couple baby fawn, and they come up. We see them about once a week. We really have a nice kind of sense that you're in a city, but you still have nature all around.
Mm-hmm. The Street of Dreams was in West Lynn this year, which is where they
built
five gigantic houses.
No.
With, you know, outdoor kitchens and infinity edge pools and wine rooms and fire in lakes and things like that.
Oh, well, we're not a part of that. We live in a more modest part of town. That's Pete's Mountain that you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
And we live in an older part of West Lynn behind Merrillhurst. And some of those properties were, you know, very old and rather undisturbed. And that's kind of where we ended up landing. Our house is one of the earliest in that area.
So, and your house, you said, is it's not all modern. And you go without certain things because of your art, correct?
Well, I think, you know, people honestly need to know that if you want a creative lifestyle, you have to make some sacrifices to have it. You can't have everything that's new. Like people think, well, they need the latest everything. Well, you can't have the latest everything and have time to do your work. You're chasing after other kinds of dreams. If you want the time to make things, you have to say no to other aspects, because making things takes a lot of time. And it also, you have to parcel out any income that you get from sales or even some teaching appointments that you might have. You still have to live somewhat frugally and be judicious about it. You can't just burn through it quickly. It's a little bit of a austerity to have a creative lifestyle in some ways.
Yeah. Do you teach now?
No, I'm not teaching at the moment.
So I pretty much full-time artist?
Yes. It's right. The first time in my life I've ever had that capacity.
Oh, wow.
I've always been a professor for most of my life. Mm-hmm.
Right. How do you like it?
I do like it. I do miss the physical engagement of lots of young people in a room. I mean, there's just nothing as amazing as that. But I am in a place in my life where I just cannot be out on the freeway, so I'm not pursuing that.
So rather than the freeway, you would your choice is of environment is walking down to the canyon?
Yes, and well, going down Old River Drive or going down the Riverview Trail, and right behind our house is a boat launch, and there are all kinds of wildlife there. You can see beaver in the Cedar Oak Island area, and there's a sea lion that barks sometimes, and it's a lively place, and the trees are so large and old, and you just don't find that so much everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I think there are probably some artists listening who live in Portland and they can't afford it anymore, and they're thinking, should I move out 20 miles? It sounds like you found a place that really worked in your art.
Well, I would tell artists that, number one, you have to think about what your real needs are. If you answer to what your needs tell you, I think you'll always be safe.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Marlena Stoddard-Hayes. Her show, Hyphae, runs at Butters Gallery through November 26th. Marlena is doing an artist talk on Saturday, November the 12th at Butters Gallery at 1 p.m. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO, Marlena.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it. Andy